I am really shocked at how HBCUs don't have those courses. And they have an African humanities class where they're teaching us about history, but that's a part of African history, our commercial music.
Welcome to Black Educators Matter. This is more than a moment. It's a movement.
Hey, it's Danielle. Welcome to Black Educators Matter. Our goal is to share the stories of 500 Black educators. We will celebrate the impact and achievements, learn from the lessons and challenges, and highlight the important roles that educators play in all of our lives. I'm so excited to welcome today's guest to our show. As a do now, please tell us your name, your role in education, and answer the question, why do Black educators matter?
My name is Kevin Blackman. I am a Black educator and I teach music, band, and chorus. And I think Black educators matter because they can be essential role models for all Black students, and not just Black students, but all races. And they are very important because of the history that African Americans have been through in this country. And it's important to have Black educators as those role models for our youth, period.
Now, you said that you are a band and chorus teacher. How long have you been teaching?
I taught for 7 years. I'm currently in grad school now, so I've took some time off.
Okay, what are you in grad school for?
I'm in grad school for commercial music, composition, and arranging at Belmont University.
Are you a musician?
Yes, I am.
What do you play?
I play trumpet and piano and some other instruments, but my primary instrument is trumpet and piano.
Do you sing?
Yeah, I do a little singing on the side.
Now, where are you from, Mr. Blackman? Oh, no, before you tell us that. You taught for 7 years. What grades have you taught?
I started my first 3 years teaching middle school, and I moved on to high school, and I taught 3 years in high school, and I was just teaching band for 3 years there.
Okay, so we got middle school and high school with this music background. Where are you from?
I'm from Columbus, Georgia.
Okay, and if you can remember your K-8 experience in Columbus, Georgia, what was it like going to school? Did you have diverse classmates? Were your teachers diverse?
I mostly had a lot of Black educators, Black teachers, and being from K-8, I had a lot of different experience with teachers, keeping teachers. Like, teachers would not stay in the position. They would leave mid-year or the next year, they weren't back. So it was a little rough trying to keep a teacher, and, you know, because you get used to a teacher after a certain amount of time, and it's like they wouldn't stay long. But that was kind of because I was in that type of school system, and it was like a little rough as far as the behavior from the other kids. So that's why I kind of wanted to get into education as well, too.
And what about your high school experience?
My high school experience was awesome. I just felt like in the music side of everything, I had the same issue with keeping directors in those programs, because you'll get attached to them if they're there for 2 years, and then the next year you have to get adjusted to a new teacher and everything changes. Other than that, I really enjoyed my high school experience.
Now, did you have exposure to music programs in school, or were you involved with music outside of school?
It mostly started in school when I was in middle school, when I first picked up an instrument. Actually, I started singing in a singing group with my brother and sister when we were like four or five years old, and we would sing at church, and then we started harmonizing. We would sing in unison, like, you know, "Oh, happy day" or something like in unison, and then we would split off into harmony. So that was interesting as we got older. And then I was in middle school band, and that's when I really decided I wanted to do music and education at the same time.
So talk to us about college. You had this high school and elementary school experience where, although you were able to play an instrument in middle school, you dealt with a lot of teacher turnover. Now you go to college. Where'd you go to college, and did you go knowing that you wanted to be a teacher?
Yes. I went to college at Alabama State University, and I was majoring in music education. And when I first arrived, I felt like I was at a lower level as far as my skill set and as a musician, because of all those different teachers that were there or they weren't there. It would be a sub in the classroom in high school for months and maybe even this whole entire semester. So I feel like I wasn't prepared enough to even be at Alabama State for, you know, in their music program. And I got there, I met some friends that were pretty much like on the same level, and they kind of were like encouraging me, like, okay, we got this together. And I was actually better than I thought, but I do feel like there's always room for growth. And Alabama State really humbled and taught me that, and I gained so much just from that community of people that I was surrounding myself with.
Is Alabama State University an HBCU?
Yes, it is.
Tell us about that HBCU experience.
The HBCU experience is just like what we were talking about, why Black educators matter, because that's like that sums everything up with just being at an HBCU. Those educators are there for the students. And by me being in the HBCU and then transitioning for grad school at a predominantly white school, it's a very different culture. And it's an awesome culture, both, I think, but just being around my people and experiencing that culture and that connection is an awesome experience. And every African-American student, a college student, should at least have some type of HBCU experience, because it's a difference like that you would never experience anywhere else. I was in the marching band. It was awesome. I love the marching band.
Tell us about that HBCU marching band experience, especially as you think about how it shaped you to be a band teacher.
Okay, I'm going to start from the beginning, because when I first got that, it was so hard. Like, I was like, it was like complete shock to me. Like, and I watched Drumline, because Drumline came out maybe a couple of years before I crabbed in 2004. And it was like, I was like, oh my God, I stepped into a nightmare, because it was so different from what I've ever experienced. I thought I was in shape. I went running all through the summer, but not enough, obviously. So I got there and I was about to pass out, to be honest, because we had to do a lot of conditioning and I was not ready for it. And then I called my mom, and I remember getting home from the dorm and I was like, Mom, I'm in hell. And she just laughed on the phone all night. We were just laughing all night. I was like, it was so hard to even eat anything, how hard it was. But I really, really, like, after getting over that hump, it was just amazing experience. Like, the band was just so precise. Like, the precision they have with marching style. It was just a big program. I used to love hanging out with my friends, because we would all talk to hang with each other and stick, you know, with each other. And I've developed bonds that way. That's the beautiful thing about the HBCU experience, too. The bonds, you are kind of forced to do it, but it's like, it's so rewarding at the end, because you establish lifelong friends. Like, it's beautiful and amazing.
So how did all of those experiences lead you to begin a career in education?
Well, those experiences just kind of combined together really molded me into the person I am today. Just being in the recital hall with Dr. Jones, he was a piano player and he used to accompany all the musicians, hanging out with my friends, going to the cafeteria and just, well, we call it the calf, and we would eat this, like, it was buffet style and just all those things. And then having to wake up at 6 a.m. and go to pre-drill, and it was just so many things that routine, and it was exhausting. And then one time I took 18 hours, which was crazy. And I was also pledging a fraternity at the time, Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. So I had a lot on my plate. And I would be out of my mind for pledging and taking 18 hours. But I had a successful semester. And that showed me how strong I am to be able to take on a load that big. And it was exhausting, but I excelled. And I feel like all those, the good times, the bad times, those experiences have helped me grow as a person, as a musician, in this period all the way around.
Were you a first generation college student?
Yes, I was. I am. Yeah.
So after you graduated and you began your career teaching band and chorus, did you find that you had a shared sense of identity and connectedness between you and your Black students? And if so, how did you identify it?
Yes, I felt like there was I shared a lot of common things with those students because just by being Black. I was at a school, a pretty rough school in the city of Columbus when I first started teaching. And the students, they had a white chorus teacher the year before. And I hate to say it this way, but I felt like they didn't give her a hard time as they gave me because of the change as far as me being a male, and then I was a Black male, and then I was a new teacher. The bright side of that is when I stuck around and the students really saw, oh, this man is not going anywhere, and he's going to stay on our case. And it's like all the classroom management tips and methods and strategies that I incorporated, like I had something for everything, and it was like, he will not let up. So when I established that, it was like a change in growth. I showed growth at the end of the year from how they were not even reading music. They didn't know what a quarter note was. And at the end of the year, they were able to clap out rhythms and even sight sing. And it showed the next year. So that connection, just by being African-American and even being a male in that classroom, it gave them a sense of, like, some of them didn't have father figures at home. So it was like, we're going to go to Mr. Blackman. That really right there on its own was a big change and an awesome experience for the students and me.
What has been the most impactful moment you've had as an educator thus far?
Okay, well, with so many experiences there. But this is what sticks to me, and this is a story from when I was a high school teacher. I built a bond with the students in high school, mainly my drum majors. I selected two drum majors, and I would train them alongside with my assistant band director, Jessica. And we built such a bond with the kids that they would just call us, like, Mr. Blackman. And they would just see the excitement in when I was showing them how, like, to do band, because it was like I was showing them a whole other way of how band it operates. So just having that moment with the kids, like, and building that bond with them was amazing. And this is the moment where it hit me hard, where I realized how those bonds can really affect you as an educator. My drum major, just made drum major in the summer came, and we were getting ready for a band camp. And I remember we gave him a ride home, and he was working at Waffle House. And he was walking home one night, and he was struck by a car. And he was unconscious for like 3 weeks. And we went to the hospital. It was very emotional for the students, for the teachers. And we thought he wasn't going to make it. Like, we went into the room and saw him. He was unconscious. And we went to visit him every single night until he woke up. And it was just, we had prayer. My mom came down. They prayed the hospital with his mom. And I built a bond with his mother. We still communicate till this day. And this was 4 years ago. And it's just that bond, and that bond experience really was an impactful moment on my life because I've never had that close of a bond with students. Because middle schoolers, you know, you have to be a little bit more firm with them. But high school, you have to stay firm, but they kind of already know, like, come on now, let's get with the program. But those kids, they were like, had a place in my heart because it was like, they were so mature. They would do everything I asked them to do. So that really hit home, and it was like, okay, whoa. And it almost made me want to remove myself from being an educator because it was just so sad. But at the same time, it's like, no, this is what you're here for. This is life. You know, things are going to happen like this. So, you know, you need to be there for those kids. And he survived that because of that prayer and because of that support he was fighting, you know. So it was just beautiful. That's one of the beautiful parts about being an educator. And this boy was a straight-A student, was planning on going to Morehouse. I taught him how to play piano. Then he got better than me on the piano. It was like, that was amazing just to see him. He was started singing. He wanted to kind of imitate me. And I was like, oh. So, you know, my head got big for that because he was, you know, trying to imitate me. So I was like, that was amazing. But Yeah, it's just, I still communicate with him too. So I just wanted to share that because a lot of people don't know that story. And I'm even working on getting that story out because his story is remarkable. And then like the outcome of that was he was able to do a parade that spring semester. He did the Martin Luther King parade. And it was like he was just in a coma like 6 months ago, or no, it was like 4 months ago. And I'm like, wow, this is the turnaround was just amazing.
That is an incredible story. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that it speaks to what you talked about in your elementary school experience, which was like the teachers not being there and that teacher turnover and how hard it is to try to start over. When you were an educator, you were there. You were there for him, even when he was in the hospital and when his family was having an incredibly dark moment, you were still committed to being his teacher and his band teacher. So that was such an incredible story. I'm so happy to hear that he was able to be in the Martin Luther King parade in that spring and that you did not walk away from your calling as a teacher.
This is just one of many stories, and we want to keep the conversation going.
Follow us on Instagram at blackeducators.matter.
Visit us online at www.blackeducatorsmatter.org.
Help build the movement by joining our Patreon.
Now, let's get back to our Project 500 podcast.
As you reflect on all of your experiences from the teacher turnover that led to you going to an HBCU and you feeling unprepared, but finding out that you are much stronger than you give yourself credit for, and then having this incredible experience with your student, all of your experiences as a Black man from the South, I will ask you, what is the state of education in Black America and how did we get here?
Okay, not only just the absent teachers, but just through my high school experience, I want to share that. You had to take a graduation test. I remember my junior year, people were crying, coming out the hallway, and I was like, okay, that's not going to be me. I passed like three parts of the test. I think it was a four part, which was the science part that I had to take. And I took it, and I did not pass, and I was like, whoa. And so that was like the first little scare moment. I was like, okay, whoa. So the next moment I had another opportunity to take it again. Failed again, and it was like a high score. It was like I don't remember exactly, but it was like, say, like a 500 on it. You had to pass a five, make a 500 on it. So I would get like a 498, 2 points away, and it said, if you do not pass it with a 500, you will not walk across that stage. So it had got to the point where it was like the last time opportunity I could take the test, and I got a 498 again. So I was like, what? So I was really upset. So my mom, we paid $60 to $90 for them to hand grade the test because they put them through a machine. So we paid that money and it was still the same result, 498. So I was devastated because I did not pass and I was not able to walk with my class. And I was also an honors student, which I had a 3.0 GPA. It just didn't make any sense. And I passed every other part. And I was not able to walk with my class. And that was devastating for a child. I was a child at that time. And whether they like it or not, I don't care if I was a certain age, I still was considered a child. You know, I wasn't able to buy alcohol. I wasn't able to do anything like that. So it really, really, that still bothers me to this day. And, you know, a good friend of mine just reminded me of that recently. You know what I'm saying? Like, she told me, she was like, you weren't able to walk to class. So I appreciate her for reminding me, like, you should be pissed because I was able to walk with my class. But anyway, it really, really bothers me. So
a graduation test, though? Like,
yes. Okay. And they don't even have a graduation test anymore. I taught in Georgia for all those years, and they abolished it. So I'm like, so all these kids can walk across state, they have to pass the end of course test. And they have all these little after-school classes. I'm like, I'm hating on these kids. Like, I'm serious. I love like that they were able to walk across there. But it's like, I wasn't able to do that. And my mom, she's still pissed about that. So that's the state right there. Like, wow. And I feel like I was robbed.
Yeah. What about as a music major and a professional in music, and you compare your HBCU experience with music education to your PWI experience with music education? How do they match up?
I feel like there's a disconnect because the school that I'm at now, like Belmont University, they're teaching Black music. They're teaching commercial music, and they give all the credit. Like I mentioned earlier how they're giving all the credit to our race for establishing commercial music. But then I go to Alabama State, all classical. And I'm just like, this is a HBCU. I wasn't able to name one composer, a Black composer from Alabama State. It's all Mozart, Bach, Beethoven, Chopin, all those people. But when I get to Belmont, I learn about Thomas Dorsey. I kind of heard about Mon Rainey like throughout my upbringing, just Thomas Dorsey, Robert Johnson. It's just so many. I can't even think all of them. Bessie Smith. She wasn't a composer, but she was a singer. But that's one of those people that's credited to the commercial music that we discussed. And it's just, I am really shocked at how HBCUs don't have those courses. And we are HBCUs. And they have an African humanities class where they're teaching us about history. But that's a part of African history, like African-American history, our commercial music. So that's why I feel like it's important and it's essential to have that program in HBCUs and even like in high school. It's just not there. It's like we're always missing that information. And I feel like, you know, wow, I had to come to all the way to Nashville, Tennessee and go to a predominantly white school to learn that. And that's sad. And that's the state of education. And I feel like we need to do better with that for African-American people. We need to really pay attention to that, and that needs to be brought up and on the table.
I think that that speaks to like a real problem, which is the global erasure of Black people and Black contributions throughout history in different areas and different subjects and different core subjects. Because I'm sure the music curriculum you studied was lovely. It just totally erased Black people and Black people's contributions. And likely because in order for a curriculum to be seen as reputable, it had to meet certain standards. And likely the Black contributions aren't listed on that standards list.
Alabama State, they're making some type of improvements little by little in 2020. But our school was founded by slaves. But we have some buildings, some facilities that are named after a slave owner. So Klansmen. And I mean, one facility is Bibb Graves. They're working to change the name and have that removed now. And I think that's something that's awesome. But I just feel like it just took so long, you know, for them to do that. But, you know, the school, I think that's beautiful that they're doing it. Now they're paying attention to that. So they are trying to incorporate those things now. And it is a process for us to get those things done. So, I mean, I don't want to, you know, discredit them because they really are trying and people are learning their history. That's the beautiful thing about our culture. We are learning each day and we're standing up to it. And we're like, we're not going to tolerate this and we're not going to have this be associated with that because you hate us. That we don't want anything dealing with hate towards our race because we know how beautiful we are. So I'm glad that they are making those type of improvements. But I just really wish that we're going to get all the way there with our music, everything. We're going to be the kings and queens that we deserve to be and get the recognition that we need to be as African-American people.
You said it. And I think that just like with the music curriculum, with Bibb Graves, with all of these statues of different colonizers, it's just how it just shows how white supremacy culture is enshrined and protected in different institutions across our society. Whether it be having the statue of Columbus somewhere or having to clap because we have access to school, but then we go to school and we have to live in a dorm that is named after a Klansman. It's like
city, like Columbus. You just mentioned it, so I'm like, yeah, I'm from Columbus, so it's like,
Yeah, but day by day, minute by minute, little by little, we are waking up, and it is great to know institutions are taking steps to address those wrongs.
But as far as being, you know, in the Black education system, I think that it's really a big come up for us. We've come a long way, but we have a lot more work to go.
So as a Black man from Georgia, and you live in Tennessee, or are you from Tennessee too?
From Columbia, Georgia, just moved to Nashville, Tennessee for grad school. So I'm here temporarily.
Okay, so from Georgia, HBCU educated in Alabama, PWI educated in Tennessee. So you have been in the South. As a Black man who has gone through education and experienced education in the South, through that lens, how did we get here? So other than just like classroom experiences that you've had with students, just overall, when you think about the curriculum that you've had, the types of teachers that you had in your K through 12 experience versus going to an HBCU versus your PWI experience, and even pursuing higher education as a first generation college student, thinking about some of the barriers that you had to face. You spoke about the role that Black educators have played throughout our history in this country. So how did we get to where we are today?
We got here just by everybody breaking through those barriers, by Black people breaking through those barriers. And it's been such a long fight, and we've really excelled through all the problems that we face. That's something that I see every day. And that's what I've seen, the growth. Like, we've come so far, and there's so many opportunities available now, more opportunities than when I was in school, and probably when you were in school. So it's a lot more open. Like, it's up to the kids now. They have a lot more options to either decide to go to college or continue their education, or they decide, oh, I just want to get a regular job. So, and they still have another opportunity later down the road. So, because there's so many opportunities for them. So that's just how my thought process on. So I think that it's just been a huge shift in education for Black people.
How have you grown since you began your career as an educator?
You mean not physically, right?
No, not physically.
Okay, because if you want to talk about that, seriously, I've grown tremendously, like in both ways, to be honest. But I've grown. It's been a transition over the years, especially like with personal life and then just the teacher life and educator life. So I see a transition. If I could look back from my first year being a teacher to now, it's an amazing journey. And I still feel like there's a long journey ahead. So I'm actually looking forward to it. It's a little scary. I'm a little scared, but still excited at the same time, because I'm like, you know, maybe one day I'll be like Ron Clark and can be on TV for something, or for having an awesome program. That's what I look forward to. Every teacher wants to be famous for that. I mean, I don't know the fame. I will accept it, and I feel like everybody should try to reach as far as they can go, and go as high as they can go.
So it sounds like you have really high aspirations for developing a strong music program for some students.
Yes.
Where do you want to do? What do you want to do with your teacher career?
I would like to start a commercial program somewhere where there's music technology, and even like at a high school. And I feel like this is something for Black students, and mostly predominantly Black schools, to get programs where commercial music is important, because I feel like classical music is important, but also commercial music, because that's a part of our culture. We are the pioneers for commercial music. I've been to school and studied commercial music, and they start back from all the way back to the ring shout from Africans, and that they brought over here. And then
tell us about the ring shout. I don't know what that is. Break it down.
The ring shout is an African custom that they were worship their ancestors, and it was just like a kind of like how the shout start in the gospel, like the churches, like, and that's how it started from. Just it was more like a chant, or I can't really imitate it, but it's, they have a ritual where they stand around in a circle, they play instruments, and they do their chants, and they call it the ring shout. And that even moved over to where it went to our churches now that we have, like the Methodist churches and all different denominations where they have it shouting and everything. So it kind of transitioned over time and developed over time into that. So
break it down. You were telling us about like how commercial music is our culture. And I don't know what that means. So keep telling us. You said like the ring shout. What else about it is our culture and why it's so relevant for Black students to be exposed to this?
Well, for one, I went to a HBCU and I always studied classical music. So that's the European culture. But when you get into a school, I'm in a classroom of 20, 35 white students, and the professor is even white, and he's talking about ring shouts. He started off with African. His presentation was commercial music, and I'm thinking, I'm finna talk about Elvis and, Shania Twain, just using names, but he started off with African-American history and how they were brought to this country, and pretty much the combination of those syncopated rhythms with the European chord structure and their notated music, and they would the Black people would listen to it and they would imitate it, but they'll add that soul, that feeling, that different, those syncopations, the way that their interpretation of the music, they would incorporate that, and that's what started a whole different musical genre. And it started with country blues, and it went to gospel. I'm probably out of order, but it's just how it just transitioned. Jazz, that's how it started, through Black people. And I really appreciate that by going to this school, them giving the credit where it's due to African Americans, because they give us so much credit. And Belmont, they do a beautiful job incorporating inclusion, basically incorporating the Black people, because I feel like a lot of Black people feel like we'd be left out. And especially in music, because we're classical and we're just so proper, and this is not, that's the proper technique. But you go to commercial music, it's like, oh, we want everything that you have, like runs, like melismas that they put into songs, that's all accepted. They love it. And those professors there at the school, they come sing for me, and they hear you sing, you have some soul, yes, baby, you have it. And it's like, it's a white professor. So it's like they embrace our culture there, and musical culture especially. So I really appreciate that. And just, that's what a lot of Black students need to see. They don't know that. I went to school and the music, and it's like, I'm thinking, oh, this is the proper way I'm doing music. But it's like, no, your music is good too. Our music, American music and African music and African American music, this is our music. You're like, we are credited for all these great artists, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson. They've just, they paved the way further down. But it's like, we have Robert Johnson. He was like, he started country blues pretty much. So it's like, and he supposed to have sold his soul just to get good on the guitar. And like those type of things are just amazing to me, those stories that they have. So it's just that combination. And it's also a book, I can't remember the author, but it's called The Power of Black Music. And it's just a powerful book that we study. And I just got all this information from on how it just shows how powerful our culture is and how it came over. We went through all those obstacles and we still overcame everything. So it's beautiful.
And we have an incredible legacy. And like you said, the culture loves what Black people create. Black Yes. people really do create the culture. So I'm excited for you as you think about your teacher dreams with building this commercial music program for students, for Black students, but so that they can really understand the legacy that they've had on all types of music, all genres of music, not just rap or R&B or hip hop. So we know what you would like to do. When you are reflecting on your journey, what challenges have you grown through? How have you had to address a specific challenge and grow to become a better educator?
Of course, I mentioned classroom management, but that's just like one little thing. I was able to get over that obstacle. Just being able to form that bond with the students, it's important. It really helped with my growth, because if you can establish a relationship with those students, and a relationship with just the whole entire school body, it's rewarding, and it shows a difference, and it helps you grow, because you're not only getting the support from other teachers, but you're getting different strategies and methods from the other teachers, like just kind of observing them and watching them, like, okay. So any type of obstacles that I face, I had that support there, and I was able to incorporate some of their methods, and they would give me advice how to work with kids, and the kids would even, they sometimes would give me, especially in the high school level, they would give me advice on how to make it work. They'll kind of give me the inside scoop on what's going on, like if something's going on, something's about to brew up where like somebody wants to fight or something, I have like my little intel there. I was like, okay, they kind of can, like, Mr. Blackman, just want to let you know it's going to be something going on today. I need you to do this. And they just be proactive in that, and they really were able to diffuse the situation before it got out of control. So I just love those type of things where you establish that community. And I want to kind of get back to that. That's why I wanted to increase my skill set and be able to provide them with more opportunities, because the students that I work with, they were like, wanted to do rap and R&B, but I had to teach the standards, you know. So that's pretty much what I want to do, and that's the growing pains, I think.
What advice do you have for first-year educators?
First-year educators, just make sure, because I wasn't as organized, and still not as organized as I need to be. But I just want them to make sure that they need to get organized and make sure that you, this is another thing, be more positive. Even if the students are challenging, you have to be more positive, because it's hard. Don't get me wrong, that is the one of the hardest things. But you have to reward them with positive vocals. Like, when a student, for example, if a student is kind of being disrespectful, or they're doing something, or they're talking, you know, you kind of just point at another student's like, oh, thank you. Thank you, this person, that person, for doing a good job. I appreciate that. And then the student may feel left out. Now, these methods doesn't always work, but it can work, I believe. And just kind of praising them, they need more praise. I feel like students do need more praise, because, you know, some of them are not getting any praise from anyone. There may be another teacher that's not giving them praise, always putting them down. So, and their parents, maybe something at home that's going on that, you know, we can't really handle. So giving them that praise, it really motivates the students. And I feel like that's something that first year teacher needs to do more of, and also just work on classroom management, and just, you know, developing that bond with kids. That also will help you develop the bond by saying that constructive, that positive, giving that positive feedback. So that's my thing.
Thank you for walking us through your journey and telling us and showing us how your passion for music has led you into the classroom and being a committed educator through the ups and the downs, and even going to pursue higher education so that you can expose your kids to more opportunities. Are there any Black educators that you would like to thank?
Ms. Davis, Dr. Cara Harris, Washington, Dr. Joelle Jones, Dr. Alma Lau, Dr. Pamela Burns, so many of my college professors. I don't even think I can remember them people from the people, not those educators from high school. Some of them I can, but it's just, Miss Kim Boynton. Oh my God, I cannot believe I forget my teachers. These are high school teachers. Like, I feel like it's so far away. It's so many. I can't name all of them, but all of them know who they are. They just know they had an impact on my life. Oh, Miss Anshelle Davis. That was my last band director in high school. I went through three of them in high school. So, Anshelle Davis, that's my homie, and she is amazing. Thank you. Sorry, that was horrible singing, but yeah, and back.
Thank you so much, Mr. Blackman. Everything that you have done, as you share in the tradition of Black educators in educating future generations and being committed throughout all of the ups and downs, everything that you've done, it was, it is, and it always will be worth it. So thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to use this platform to share my story. And, you know, I don't get this a lot, you know, it's, people don't ask me to do nothing, you know, and I got a story. I'm just saying, I'm just kidding. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Black Educators Matter.
Are you ready to share your story? Visit us online at www.blackeducatorsmatter.org to sign up.
Remember, make excellence equitable and thank a Black teacher today.